Alison Redpath from RMIT GSB. I'm just wondering whether one of the speculative thoughts about why people live at home for longer is to do with increasing house size. As a parent of Gen Ys myself, a lot of my contemporaries' children are staying at home, but it's very comfortable because the houses are larger than for a previous generation.
Yeah, exactly. This actually got brought up at a presentation I did the other day for ACT government leaders, and that was one of the points that they made, and I think that's a really valid point, is that it is more comfortable to live at home. There's less children in the home, we're having less children. There's more space, there's the McMansion, so yeah, it's more comfortable. I think that's a more than reasonable speculation about why they're staying at home, amongst other things. Yeah.
Another question? Just quickly, I was a little surprised, Rebecca, at that last figure you mentioned, that the single males are wealthier than the single females. It didn't seem to fit with some of the earlier things you're saying about the professional qualifications and so on of the single females.
It doesn't.
Apart from the fact that they're paid less.
Yeah, I think it is changing, but I think it's something that Generation Y women, and in fact all women and men, should be aware of, that there still is some differences between wages. But really, that I haven't done a gender sort of wage gap analysis here, a proper one, but it comes down to Generation Y men have a higher attachment to the labour force, so they enter it earlier due to their occupation choices, whereas Gen Y women go on to study, and so they're more likely to be in part-time employment and sort of don't get there. And then they'll, you know, get out of university with their degree, maybe work for a couple of years, and then go on to raise a family, and so they're sort of still behind with their super accumulation and asset and income accumulation.
Yeah. The lower pay factor is interesting, though. That still exists at that age. I'm a little surprised. Is there another question? Yep, over here. And then...
Clive Morley from RMIT. Just following that up, it does suggest that it's not having children, because these girls aren't having children. So it suggests that's one explanation that's probably not explaining the difference in salaries and so on, and it probably is more around negotiating abilities and so on. Yeah, I just thought I'd add that in.
And
I'm sorry, this is turning into a bit of an RMIT fest. Caroline Bayless from Global Sustainability at RMIT. Rebecca, I wondered, in terms of housing affordability and the saving capacity of Gen Ys, whether you've come across what I'm hearing anecdotally in some of the building trades, where Gen Ys are actually banding together as friends to purchase houses together as a group rather than in cohabiting couples and things like that, which then in turn puts other requirements on building stock to have lots of en suites and more bathrooms because they'll share certain things but not bathrooms.
Right, yeah. Yeah, my friends just bought a house actually with three bathrooms, one for each bedroom, and that's sort of an investment property. But I haven't heard of that happening actually, but now that you've mentioned it, it sort of makes perfect sense. But we didn't look at that in this report. Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be one of the trends of the future, though. Yeah, interesting.
Hi, Rebecca. My name's Donna Adams. I'm from the Law Institute of Victoria's Young Lawyers section, and I just wanted to ask, I might have missed this at the start, but what sort of cross-section of professions, industries, trades was the data collected from?
As I mentioned, it was from the Australian Bureau of Statistics Household Expenditure Survey, and what I have used are broad occupation groups. So it doesn't delve down into... Are you familiar with ASCO codes? No. Well, there's an Australian Standard of Classification of Occupations, and they sort of start really broad and then delve down into the detail. Now, the stuff that I looked at was just the broad. Because they changed so much over, and it was very hard to compare over the years, so I had to choose the broad occupation groups because we're 15 years and occupations change so much. I mean, they change so much from year to year, but over the 15 years, yeah. So it is... with the wage differences, it would be prudent to do... I mean, usually when you're looking at wage differentials, you actually run regression models and things like that. Now, this is just descriptive stats, but you usually look at descriptive stats first to sort of get an idea of whether there is a relationship happening or a trend. So...
You blend it together, blue collar and white collar.
No, like it'll be professionals, associate professionals, clerical trades, tradespeople and things like that. So they're all sort of blended together to denote what sort of education, attainment they've had to have gotten to be categorised that way, yeah. But if you look at the report, you'll be able to see the broad groups and definitions.
Just the mic's coming up if it helps.
It's Michael Rigoni from Metlink. Just with those sort of breakdowns in terms of employment and that type of thing, would the discrepancy in terms of incomes between men and women in their 20s have something to do with, say, the increase in trades, sort of men doing trades, not going to university? Is there that sort of analysis being done at all?
Do you mean the income or the asset accumulation?
Income.
Well, the income, as I said, it's they're all put into broad occupational groups. So tradespeople, you would have builders and you would have hairdressers. Now, you could say, well, you know hairdressers get paid less than builders. But you could also say, well, why? They have to do exactly the same amount of time and they're put in this broad occupation group for a reason. But no, I don't think it's to do with them starting a trade earlier, because that accounts for that. Them getting put into the category takes that away.
Oh, but I mean in terms of the earning powers of, say, in the last 10 or so years, one big change that I can say, I don't know by fact, but by anecdotally, that a lot of people, say men who are working in the trades, say builders and, you know, carpenters and so forth, actually can earn a lot of money in their 20s, as opposed to, say, any white-collar person.
Right, yeah. I think that's a really valid point. And you are probably right that they are earning more. But I guess my point is, why aren't the women earning just as much if they're having to go through as much training to get a trade certificate?
Right. But it's the likelihood or the desirability to do those type of training as opposed to...
Yeah.
Effectively, what I'm saying is, like, a lot of trains of people, and, like, for instance, I've got a postgraduate degree. I worked to, like, studied in part-time till I was...
Sorry, I was just saying I've got a postgraduate degree. I worked till I was 24, 25 working in a bottle shop and, you know, just sort of just getting by.
Yep.
Because the end result was I wanted to be a white-collar worker, but I noticed that the people that were coming through as tradespeople,
yep,
were quite wealthy at much younger. So, you know, we're talking about 23, 24-year-old males that could earn, say, $60,000 to $80,000 in a year,
right,
from having their own business. This is probably something that might not have happened, say, even 15 years ago.
Right.
So it's much more of a, say, environmental difference or social, like, you know, effect of than economic demand than, say, yep, a generational thing.
Yep, I think you're right. And as I said before, you would really have to take in a lot more variables to get down into the differences, and that would be one of them.
Yeah. And I suspect, Rebecca, you'd suggest that the nurses who are currently going on strike would argue very strongly that their level of pay reflects a female tradition of nurses in this country, and they haven't yet got away from the old comparative wage justice arguments where females were accepted as being paid lower. Without pushing the case of the nurses particularly, but I think it does indicate it.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Hi, Rebecca. That was a great talk. Catherine Birchall from Money 101. We do quite a lot of research in the financial services industries and things like that, and a lot of the differences in this generation is also about consumer behaviour. We get down to the fact that they really are very interested in it, but obviously a lot of the expenditure that goes on and retail therapy and those things are targeted at young ladies. Is that correct? And was that taken into account at any point when you looked at wealth, etc.?
Yeah, no, we didn't, because it was a household level expenditure, we couldn't break it down into gender. No, but I think it'd be interesting to do so much more with this research, but no, we couldn't do that.
Mm. I've got an employer's question, if you like. I was fascinated if I understood a couple of your figures correctly, that in the 20s, Gen Y are particularly interested in a career, or the Gen Y males it may have been, but in their 30s they're interested in making money. There is a similarity in some of our minds between the two. But from an employer's perspective, I don't know whether you've given any thought, but the question that occurs to me is, how does an employer actually tap in to that interest in careers? Because there is real problem in areas of skills shortages at present in getting those younger people to apply for jobs, or getting them to do the training in those particular areas. I could say urban planning from my career is a particular case at present where there's a drastic shortage of skilled people.
Look, I think if I knew the answer to that question, I would be on a lot more money than what I am now.
I'll try.
When I launched this for AMP, that was the vibe all around the room. We had a guy, Peter Sheehan. I don't know if you know him. Mm. He's a Gen Y expert. He's a Gen Y guy. And all the questions were directed at him. And how do we keep Gen Y? And how do we keep them happy? And how do we communicate with them? And, you know, there's all this worry about Generation Y. I really wish I could answer that question. Personally, I believe it's a matter of them being at a different life stage, which is one of the components. They're not, they don't have families, they don't have to have security in their job or in a place even. It's a particular city. They can move around. And it's also the economic environment, whereas, you know, they've got the market power.
Right.
But I really wish I could answer.
Yeah, but they are interested in careers in their 20s.
Well, what we've seen, yeah, they're interested in having a successful career. Mm. Mm.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Alistair from Hudson Career Management. If I could just perhaps add on to the end of that, we've been working with a number of companies on graduate programs lately, and while a lot of companies spend a lot of money getting people in the first place, we're finding that grads aren't staying for very long, so 2 to 3 years is about a maximum. So that's why it's really important to have those career development opportunities, you know, rotational programs, getting contact with senior executives, showing clear career paths for when they get a bit frustrated with, you know, being stuck in these lowly roles quickly, and at the start of their careers, you can show that there is a path for them to take on quickly, and that they have got paths through to more senior roles within the organisation. So it's that retention strategy for the first couple of years is vital to keep some of that enthusiasm going.
Yeah, thanks for that. Another question? It's me? Yeah, over in the...
Sorry, just one more. Do you keep any... Rebecca, do you keep any data on the amount of professionals going and seeking opportunities offshore? I know that certainly I've got some data on how much young lawyers are moving around, but it'd be interesting to know about other professional groups, accountants and
I think the HILDA data might show job mobility, but I'm not sure if it actually shows whether they're moving domestically or internationally. I would have to look into it further and probably get back to you about it.
Interesting thought, though, isn't it?
Yes.
As to how many of them. Because I think that is... Did you get anything about why generation being more interested in travel, perhaps?
No, without comparison not with, this, at all. Not with the data we have.
Yeah, okay. I think we've got maybe...
Yeah, hi. Stephen Jones from Australia Post. Just following up on that question, I suppose... is there any data, and apologies if we've already mentioned this, on the length of time the Gen Y is willing to serve in a role before they're keen to move on, before they get bored?
Not with this data that I've used, but again, not that I'm aware of. I'm sure that's probably some type of HR group have surveyed them on this, but not the data we have, no. Yeah.
Certainly the anecdotal experience and certainly my experience is they move on pretty bloody quickly. Another question? Comment? Observation? I might display some ignorance then. On one of your pie charts, Rebecca, you had boomers, X generation, Y generation, you had builders.
Builders, yes. So they're... Just let me check. So builders are pretty much everyone from 1906 to 1945.
I think so, I'm a builder.
So they're a generation that's kind of missed. So there's not a lot of research on the builders. Generally, they're not in the labour force, and you know, they've sort of grown up in the Depression, or they're everyone's grandparents. But yeah, because they're not in the labour force, they're missed a lot, and they're not. There's not a lot of research.
Yeah.
Done on them.
And I suspect there will be more research now as the skills shortages in the workforce occurs, and we're trying to encourage more people to stay in the workforce. Oh, I was interested. I'd never seen the expression before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Thanks, Mark Griffiths. I was just wondering whether you've got any sort of anything to say about the variability within generation as opposed to variability across generations, so, you know, and how the magnitude of that variability compares.
Well, a lot of the stuff that I did present was broken down into three separate age groups. So the 15 or 16 to 19 year olds, the 20 to 24 year olds, and then the 25 to 29 year olds. Is that what you're talking about?
Sort of interested in that characteristic, the difference between income between generations, is that the variability within the Gen Y generation, say 25 to 29, is that as you know, one standard deviation, is that sort of around the expectation? How does that compare to the difference between the expectations between 25 and 29?
Well, I can't answer any questions about expectations, but I divide the income data up into quintiles, so that might give you some answers about variability. And I did mention that because Generation Y, there's so many people at different life stages, you know, lots of them are still at school, the 15 to 19 year olds, and then again, lots of them are still at university. And then you've got the ones that have got their degree at 25 to 29 years of age, and they're, you know, on a lot of money. So there's a large degree of variation in their incomes. So I hope that's answered your question. Sort of.
Questions? Comments?
Travis Nilsson from the building company Balderstone Hornibrook. Any comments at all regarding whether Generation X would have somewhat fueled Generation Y's drive and ambition by, Generation Y's demand for, or request, demands probably more than anything, for increased remuneration, and then Generation X responding by creating positions, increased titles and inflated job titles, such as increases in the number of people that are holding a management title within an organisation. So instead of responding by increasing Generation Y's remuneration, they're increasing it by responding to it with a management title somewhat.
Right.
So they've actually possibly fueled the drive that exists within Generation Y.
Right.
And then a lot of that Generation Y may utilise that that title to jump to another organisation in an increased position and obviously greater remuneration within another organisation. So,
right. Well, unfortunately,
if there's any comments on that from anyone else?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the behavioural sides of what you're talking about, and yeah, none of my figures could answer that question. But somebody else in the room might be able to answer.
Yeah, if there's anyone else that's sort of got any comments on where I hold my beliefs.
Are you suggesting it's dangerous to give Generation Y big titles?
Possibly. I'm suggesting that quite often, a couple of examples that I've seen is that people have utilised an inflated title position to jump to another organisation, and obviously the domino effect exists from there onwards, I dare say.
Yeah, and you probably use the big title to get them there in the first place. Yeah. Any further questions? Yep, over here.
My name is Teck Chung from Australia Post. I have a question about marriage. The Generation Y compared to X, are they getting married? Do they get married earlier or later in their life? Is your data showing evidence which way they fall?
What it did show was Generation X and Generation Y at the same age, living in as couple with
Correct.
Families.
Yeah.
And it also showed couple-only households. So are you talking couple-onlys or couples with children or both?
I'm talking about do they get married earlier in their age, or do they get married later compared to the previous generations, like Generation X, comparison?
Okay. Well, I think marriage altogether, which I haven't shown in this research as, you know, the sort of formal getting married has decreased. But what you would consider the social sort of marital status, so a de facto relationships have increased. I did show that those living as couple onlys had increased, but there was a decrease in couples with children. So altogether, it would equate to couples decreasing. Yeah. So marriage decreasing if you're going to, you know, include de facto relationships.
Are there any further questions? So I've got two over here.
Just an aside, what's the next generation called?
Zed?
it's not TV thrown around, the technology generation.
Right, yeah, Y wasn't official for a while, and there's lots of different names for Y. There's the baby boomlets, and I think... Sorry?
Nintendo generation,
yeah, there's lots of different names. I think it'll probably be Z, but yeah, there's... probably things like Facebook generation and the internet generation, and yeah, but who knows? I'm sticking with Z. It's easy. Yeah.
Hi, Sarah Knapp from Link Recruitment. I just wanted to talk to you a bit about generation wide job hopping. I was speaking with a journalist about it yesterday, and she was asking me whether I felt as a recruiter, whether it was based on salary alone. But I think I find with a lot of my candidates, their reason for leaving is more about sort of communication with their manager. And I think a lot of the times in an organisation that the managers, obviously, you know, they're quite often promoted quite quickly, especially if they're Generation Y, and don't have the skill set in regards to communication. Did you do any sort of research on job hopping or...?
No, none on job hopping, and yeah, we didn't look into that, but there probably is some data about it. But I think it's a really good point. When we've had discussions about this before, a lot of people sort of say they're really hard to manage because they their schooling system I think is quite different, and you know, always getting positive reinforcement. Oh, you did so well done. You know, it's never. And I think they find that hard, and they're not getting that in certain environments, not getting feedback and things like that. But I'm not a human resource expert, so. But I do think your point's interesting, and it would be interesting to look into that further, if the data was available. Yeah.